Good morning, good people, and welcome to the Poolproof Wisdom Podcast. Some people are destined to be a boss and to make a difference, and Denise Pines is one of them. I've known Denise for quite a while now, first meeting her at a time when she was with a communications firm she co-founded. And since then, she's gone on to become a community health advocate and media pioneer, and a trusted resource for women as they pursue midlife wellness. Denise is the co-visionary and CEO of Tea Botanics and inspiration behind Hot Flash Tea. Founder of Wise Pause, a pro-aging health and education platform, and the Fem Aging Project, which provides research and reports to the health and tech industry in addressing innovation for women ages 40 plus. She is on the board of directors for the Federation of State Medical Boards and Osteopathic Medical Board of California, and she's the immediate past president of the Medical Board of California. If that wasn't enough, she's the co-founder of Women in the Room, an award-winning filmmaker producing 11 documentaries, including the award-winning film Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. Her next documentary, Anthony Fauci, will air on PBS in the spring of 2022. Like I said, she's a boss. Today, it's her work involving women's health, particularly that of women 40 years and better. Now, I say better versus older because that's not a clear definition of aging anymore. And what the Fem Aging Project is committed to highlighting, celebrating, and improving is the mental and physical well-being of these women that, as the majority, are more concerned about staying healthy, active, and independent as they live forward. This work not only includes the obvious, but considers the implications of technology in addressing health and wellness needs. The Poolproof Wisdom Podcast is happy to welcome Denise today, and I'm very interested in what I'll learn, as I hope you will be. Good morning, Denise, and welcome to the Poolproof Wisdom Podcast. How are you this morning?
I am fantastic. How are you?
You know, I am slowly coming back to life. I think we can all say that.
Yes, we are all slowly coming back.
You know, I wanted to talk with you because I've known you for years, and it's interesting because we have been in the orbit of each other for a long time, but we haven't actually been in the same place that much, but we've stayed in contact.
Yes.
And
yes.
What I've been intrigued about is that people who are doing things are always doing things, and you've had a fascinating career. And though we haven't talked about it at length, you know, I have listed some of the high points of your career, from communications executive to health advocate to filmmaker, and that only scratches the surface. But I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your background and how you have made your transition from one area to the next and the next. And then we want to get into a little bit more about the overall initiative that we're going to be talking about here, which is your focus on women and health. So Tell me a little bit about that background.
So, you know, I always say, Charles, that I feel like I've really been blessed, that I've lived this sort of this dream life, right? And what I mean by that is that whenever I have an idea, I get to execute on it, and I execute on big ways. Mm-hmm. When I was young, I loved fashion and I dreamed of working with designers. At the time, I was living in San Francisco. So I got that chance to work with local designers and went to work with luxury brands like Louis Vuitton and Neiman Marcus. And then I moved to Los Angeles, and literally the next day was the Rodney King riots. Mm. And I thought, what? You know, my parents were trying to get me back home. But I realized that it was a moment in history, and I was living in this moment, not reading about this moment, but actually living in a new moment of social justice. And so my interest shifted into social justice and advocacy work, and how to use media, how to use events, publishing, and in partnerships to really lift the African-American and the Latino voices. Mm. So I've worked with, you know, the top 25 foundations in the world, the top 50 corporations in the world. You were at some of those corporations. And partner doing work for over 20 years now. And I've always sort of had this interest in health and wellness. And as a result, you know, I've produced over 1,000 hours of media content and wellness events. And now I'm, you know, out of my own personal hormonal health journey, I now advocate for women's health at this life stage, right? Bringing all of my experience in media, events, and publishing together. And so this led me to co-founding Tea Botanics and being the inspiration behind Hot Flash Tea, because I had hot flashes. And then that led me to talking to so many women that then I started wanting to bring health and wellness experts to midlife women. And so I created this this event series called Wise Pause. And then I was reading an article about femtech and noticed that all of the solutions were for women who were either, you know, fertility challenges or pregnancy or parenthood. And that I got really frustrated and I would call it angry. And that led me to coin this word fem aging. Like, where are the fem aging solutions? And that eventually led me to co-write a report called the Fem Aging Health and Tech Report. And next, you know, my next journey that I'm working on now, but haven't really talked about a lot, is I'm now looking to work with medical schools to improve the health curriculum along the life stage of women. Because what we find in how medical students are trained, that they really are only trained up to a certain point of women's health and women's sort of life stage and the issues around their health. And so now I'm looking to work with those medical schools to sort of change that. So I sort of see myself, right? You know, so we're on this journey, but I feel like I'm all of myself, right? I'm my 16-year-old self. I'm my 21-year-old self. I'm my 30 and 40-year-old self. And now I'm my 50-year-old self, right? I'm multi-layered. I'm multi-generational. And this is how I want women to see themselves, right? As women get older, we only see ourselves as older, but we're all of ourselves, right? And I want women to sort of feel that and sort of look at how we remove the negative language outside of how we get described, right? So that we can really thrive at this time in our life.
So those types of disparities that exist in terms of health and wellness for women, you know, I was reading through some of the details of the work that you've been doing. And, you know, there's the, you know, older term that's applied and there's a 40 plus. I always call it 40 and better because, you know, that's just how I see it. Actually, Bevy Smith has a phrase that she applies to everything, but I think particularly to women, she says it gets greater later. And I do believe in that. So what you've been doing, you're finding a juncture in the clinical, the behavioral, sociological, but it's all born of this really inherent sense of self where you have seen a need and chosen to address it and help other people find methods to address it as well. That doesn't just happen overnight. And I know, as you described, you have a lot of history just getting things started, but you are like a powerhouse in terms of making all of these things happen almost concurrently. How were you able to do that? And how were you able to build it where you could get so many other people engage in the process as well?
You know, it's interesting. I you know, like, these things, it's just organic for me, right? It's like, when I get fired up, it's like, you better get on this train with me or get out of the way, because you will get run over, right? And so I just move, right? I mean, you asked me 4 years ago, would I be talking about perimenopause and menopause? I would have looked at you sideways, like, no, I am in media. I do news, media, documentaries, like, no, I'm not talking about menopause, right? And then I have this moment that makes me talk about, you know, menopause or brings it to my attention. And then I realized, you know, I'm a smart woman. Like, why was I caught off guard? Why was I sitting at my desk, had a hot flash, and didn't even know until I had my fourth one that that's really what was happening? I really thought I was having a human combustion moment. I love horror films. And so as a kid, I've been watching them, and sort of the really cheapy ones, you know, the cheesy ones way back in those days. I remember this film where the humans were walking around, their brains were like exploding on being all over the walls and stuff. And this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking is happening to me. I'm thinking, oh my God, human combustion is for real. Mm. I'm having it. But okay, I didn't splatter yet, right? And that's when eventually I realized, wow, I'm having a hot flash. This is ridiculous. This is what it's like. This is horrible. My God, I had no empathy for my friends who were having hot flashes around me and always saying, hey, can you open up the window? Or isn't it hot in here? And I'd be like, get out of here with that crap. They're like, no, it's you. And then it becomes me, right? And, you know, and I thought as I, you know, partnered with my doctor and we developed this hot flash tea, and I started talking to more and more women and realizing how many women just had no, first, how silent they have been, right? How they've been suffering for, you know, some women 10 years, not talking about these issues and suffering, feeling like they were alone. And, you know, I thought, no more, I'm going to talk about it, you know, and you know me, I've been that person behind the scenes, making the person in front fantastic and fabulous. And so, you know, initially it took a moment for me to feel comfortable being in front, right? And it took really a friend saying, you're going to be out front. And I was like, oh, no, I'll find somebody. And she's like, no, you are the somebody, right? And once I accepted that, then it just was, you know, like, okay, I'm going to do it. I've been in news media. I've had to train people on media coaching. I know what you have to do. I know what it takes to be involved. And I just moved forward with it. And each time something comes to me, you know, how I ended up on this medical school project was someone like you asked me a question. Well, what's going to change for these women? And my first thought was, well, we've got to train the medical students along women's life stage because I sit on an admissions committee for a medical school. I know how they're actually trained. I wouldn't even have had that thought if I had not been, you know, sitting where I'm sitting, right? And so I think all the places where I find myself, you know, recently the president of the medical board, I'm now on the board of directors for the federation of all the state medical boards. I sit on a community hospital, so I understand how health impacts the inner city, you know, the places of lack of jobs and lack of housing and lack of access to good healthcare and good doctors. So it's like I'm like perfectly aligned in the elitist world of medicine to, you know, right in the gut bucket of how do we deliver good healthcare?
You know, it inspires me to hear you talk about the fact that you're taking on this issue, because let's face it, when it comes to women and anything that goes on with women, you know, a lot of guys just can't handle it. I mean, there's a shame culture, isn't there? I mean, going from, you know, the start of menstruation through the whole idea of getting older and the body changing to just even women being free with their sexuality these days. A lot of guys just can't handle it. I mean, I sometimes get a chuckle when I'm watching social media and guys are losing their shit because the fact is, you know, Nicki Minaj is doing something or what's the other one? Cardi B made a song called WAP, you know, so I'm like, get over it. So talk a little bit, or at length for that matter, about this progression of womanhood where women are able to no longer have to hide in the shadows about their sexuality, about their femininity, about the unique characteristics of the female body that are just a thing that is versus always having to act like it's done in the shadows. How do you address that in terms of getting other women who may have been of the mindset that they need to keep it quiet and hidden to say, stand up, stand tall, and be exactly who you are and don't hide it? What part of that does that play into it?
I think what you see is you're seeing that the youth saying no more. I'm no more going to be pinned down by your society's expectations of what a woman is supposed to be, right? And I'm not going to be couched under feminism because I want to be expressive around myself. I'm going to be myself. I'm not letting you define what that really is. And we see that with all of this gender jockeying and language, binary, non-binary, you know, right? These are the young people the older people are not driving this. The older people are not driving these conversations. It's the young people saying, oh, we're I'm not following that protocol. So I definitely believe that when these younger women, I mean, the Gen Z girls are talking to boys about their periods, right? And the boys are having conversations with them to understand about their periods. So that's what's happening in this teenage years now. So those girls and those boys are definitely going to be different by the time, you know, they're my age, right? But we still have the older people still rule the world. I don't care what young people might think about. The old people still cut the checks, still write the laws, right? And so they are coming in to these sort of preset norms that they're having to fight against, right? And it's the older people, as they start to open up, including myself, right? And starting to have conversations talking about menopause. And once you start talking about menopause, you can start talking about other issues. So you can start talking about, you know, vaginal and sexual health. And we can come at that clinically and we can come at that from a fun standpoint, right? And I try to do it both ways. Mm-hmm. With vaginal health, I really try to do it from like, what is it, you know, what are the varying issues? And let's talk about those issues. Let's have women talk about those issues and be open about that. And then when it gets to sexual health, what I like to do is bring a clinical practitioner in and then bring in sort of like this sort of spiritual practitioner in, right? So the physical practitioner, the more medical practitioner, can talk about the physicality of things that cause, you know, you not to have your libido being low. The other person comes in and talks about, like, let's talk about maybe some historical context to your experience. So maybe in your early years, you just had bad sex. You had bad sex with bad men.
Call it bang a bang.
Right. And so you never actually knew what good sex was. And so you just had a thing about that. Or you grew up in a household where you didn't witness, you never thought that your parents had sex, or it was never discussed, or it was always hushed tones. So, you know, kind of like working through that in your mind and also dealing with the physicality, right? So I think we have to bring both of those together. And that's what I try to do when I have conversations about these topics. I think that will help us to progress in the way that you are seeing the younger women talk about their sexuality. And they're kind of all over the place with their sexuality too, right? Shock treatment about it. And then some not shock treatment. And you are now starting to see more product solutions for vaginal issues. I mean, there is a whole website, and it's owned by a sister. And all she has on this site is all of these intimate product solutions. It's mind-boggling. I had no clue it was that much stuff out there, right? But women are starting to definitely talk and open up. And, you know, women call me about anything.
Right.
You know, sometimes I'm like, okay, I can't even believe I actually have an answer to that, right?
So when you're, of course, dealing with that, and, you know, I was thinking back, I actually referenced it in a previous podcast. There was the whole book that Oprah Winfrey came out with recently that talks about people actually taking time to understand what happened to them so that they can understand where they are now. Yeah. That's the way it is, I think, with a lot of women. They, you know, I'm going back to your, you know, story about when you had that flash and you're like, what's going on? You didn't know.
Yeah.
How open are women to the learning? Now we're talking, you know, we've already talked about the younger generation, but the women who are adults and, you know, getting older and better, how are they embracing the idea that it's okay that you may not know as much about your body, your physicality, your sexuality as you thought you did? Are they embracing that, or are they somehow a little reluctant because they don't want to seem as if they are ignorant?
No, I think older women are starting to realize that they've got to start doing stuff for themselves. They realize, you know, that the doctor isn't providing all the solutions because they're not feeling better, right? So I'm taking the pills you gave me, I'm doing this, but I'm still just not feeling the way I'm supposed to. And I think more and more women are starting to, look at alternative solutions, right? More people, I mean, COVID, just simply COVID got people out their doors and walking. I never saw so many people. I mean, at one point for an hour, I was just staring outside. I live at the top of a hill. There's no in and out, meaning you either live here or there's no reason for you to be here, right? So this isn't a walk through or a drive through. You know, my neighborhood ends at a park. And I started, I was like in my kitchen, I saw all these people. And I was like, oh my God, is there a fire? Oh my God. So I run outside and I'm looking and people are calm. So I'm like, okay, what is this? And it was people walking in my neighborhood who had never walked in my neighborhood before. Going to the park, hundreds of people there early in the morning. And it was amazing. I thought, this is one of the things that COVID did. It had people connect back to their physical body. Mm-hmm. People are so detached from their body, right? That, your body speaks to you. It tells you when you have a pain here.
That's right.
I need you to take care of this, right? Mm-hmm. But we tune out these messages in our body so much because we are so disconnected from our bodies, from what we eat to constantly sitting for so long. All of those things disconnect us from what's happening and understanding our bodies. And I think older women are starting to look for other solutions now. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Denise, when it comes to those solutions, let's talk about the basics here. Aging. Getting older, getting better, however we're going to phrase it today. It doesn't look like it used to. I mean, there's so many different stories of women who are now being held up as role models because, first of all, when you hit a certain age anymore, you don't need to sign up to become a cast member of the Golden Girls, right? You can wear what you want to wear. You can be as attractive and as sexy as you want to be. Those types of conventional shifts that are impacting the perception of aging, particularly with, guys, how are those leading the way in terms of widening the path that women can travel to being individuals as opposed to being in some prescribed role, mother, grandmother, sister, auntie, this type of thing? How is that widening it so that they can actually say, I am a full-fledged adult woman who is in the best of my life versus I am someone who has to now start thinking about the end of my life?
That's a good question. I think media is really important, right? That, we are now starting to see older women be in leading roles. They don't look like older women. I mean, let's just take Queen Latifah, for example.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's 50 years old. And she is leading a very successful television series right now,
yes.
The Equalizer, right?
I love it, yeah.
And killing it on there. And she's 50 years old. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, a 50-year-old Black woman, no, would not have that opportunity or people sitting around the room making decisions would say, oh, no, she's too old, 50, oh, no, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have really... we have been saying 50 is the new 30, but we're really putting context around what that really means and what that looks like, right? It was even interesting when I was putting together just the graphics for, working with my designer to put the graphics for Wise Pause. Mm-hmm. And the images he came back with, I said, I don't know any of those kind of women, right? It was like these old lady thing. I said, look, you know me. You know my friends, you need to make this look like how we look. That's the woman, those are the women that we are talking to, right? That's who women are today. And I think that visual context to that language really is helping us to, to break loose our concept of what aging looks like, what it feels like, and whether or not you want to be that. Mm. I mean, everybody is going to get older.
Right.
Every single woman is going to go through menopause. everybody, if you have the privilege to live an age, you will get older, gotcha. Right? And it is a privilege. It's not everybody, it doesn't happen for everyone. And you know, that if we can start to respect and value aging and not look at it as the worst thing that could ever happen to you, because you actually are going to live a pretty significant amount of time, you know, after 50, you can live to 90, that's 40 more years. Do I want to live that with the mindset of an old person?
Right?
Do I want to believe that I'm old? If I am, I'm not going to continue to learn. I'm not going to continue to challenge your body. What is it else can I use this body for? Right? You know, someone is like, why do you always do marathons and triathlons? I'm like, I am using this body up. So when it's done, it's going to say, girl, you put me to good use.
That's awesome. I like that. So the physical is important. Now, I'm with you. I turned 58 this year. And I always tell people, I'm not 58 years old. I've reached level 58. Because yes. I'm going to keep going to 100. I want the Cicely Tyson kind of ending, you know?
This is
what I'm talking about. So the physical is very important to that. So you diet, you eat right, this type of thing during the quarantine. I've been working my ass off to make sure that I can, you know, lose weight and get some things back in gear. Yeah. But the emotional aspects of this, particularly coming out of COVID-19 territory, women are often cast in the role of being the caretakers. Now, not everyone is, but that's the role that people cast a lot of women into. And many do, and they care for others extremely well, but they don't do the same for themselves. Mm-hmm. So being in the midst of COVID-19, where there was a lot of caregiving going on, and there was not necessarily that much of a focus, I'd be interested, because I've not seen it, if we look back over the time that this whole pandemic has happened, you know, so many deaths, you know, how many women were there compared to the other portions of that group? And mm-hmm. I wonder if that's because they were busy taking care of other people. It does make me wonder mm-hmm. that. So as we're looking ahead now to how women are able to get back on track and care for their emotional well-being, because I would imagine there are a lot coming out now who are probably exhausted because they've taken care of everybody else. How do they pick up now, particularly with the lesson of COVID-19, and say, I need to live my life and take care of myself emotionally, mentally, and otherwise, so that I am able to live that life that, if your body allows it, you are now going to be able to live? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, women, we are socialized to take care of others. That's just how we're wired, right? We're nurturers. We take care of others, right? And so often we do that to our detriment and to our own well-being, as you sort of mentioned. And especially Black women. Black women are the backbones of our family and the extended family. And so I always say, so as she goes, so goes the community, right? And so Black women have the worst health outcomes of any other group in the U.S. And you know, it was interesting. I did a book years ago on this. And you know, it was like, I knew that, but I think when I actually read, you know, like when we're reading the manuscript, read that, and I thought, wow, why is that? Why are Black women? And I started thinking and processing as we were doing this book that, you know, we kind of are in this sort of perfect storm of racism and sexism and then classism, right? And we pay a heavy price for that inconvenient truth, bro. Physically, we pay it and we see what happens to our bodies. We have more obesity, mentally, the stress, the trauma that we experience, and spiritually, emotionally, you know, taken away from, you know, us being able to be in this society just as a being without all of that extra layer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's not going to happen in my lifetime, but I hope it does happen in, you know, our, you know, Black people's experience, that they will have an experience where they can just be as humans, right? And not defined by any of those other things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, women, yes, are finding that they are the caretakers to their family, the caretakers to the elders in their family. And they are unable, after doing all of that, to caretake for themselves, right? And so what do these women need to do? I think there's some real simple things that we can do, that no one has to be involved in it. It takes no money. And, you know, the first one is just learning to breathe correctly, you know, breathing from our belly up into our chest and breathing out, holding that breath, right? And doing that several times, like whenever you find yourself really stressed, like for even for me, when I find myself, sometimes I might be nervous before I'm doing like a TV program, even if it's on Zoom, right? And I just will start doing some breathing work to relax myself and put myself back into the zone that I want to be. That works for anything. That works for if we're in a hospital and it's going all crazy and, you know, you're trying to figure out just going into the bathroom and taking some moment for yourself. I mean, really, all of that stuff really, really helps, you know, so doing breathing, doing meditation, just trying to keep your not keep your mind quiet, but allowing your mind to focus, either focus on your breathing, focus on some words that are really positive and healing for you, focus on a passage out of the Bible. Mm-hmm. Just those things, they're really simple. And we don't know like the impact that has on your body. There is so much evidence that shows that, you know, even historical trauma can be solved with some of those techniques. So I think some of that kind of stuff, a lot of times when we think of self-care as a woman, we think of getting our nails done and getting our hair done as self-care. And maybe if on that next level would be going and getting a massage, right? And those things are all helpful. The massage definitely is helpful because it helps to rebalance the rhythm of your hormonal system. So getting a massage is something I really encourage people to do. But, you know, we've got to find other ways, drinking some water, putting, you know, eating a piece of fruit. That's self-care. That's what that does for your body, really helps your body. Your body is very thankful for that. So I think it's just learning some simple things like that, that we need to have women incorporate and just teach them how to use these things and how to, you know, do them while you're even in the room full of a bunch of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Will really help.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to change how women are. Women, you're not going to change our nurturing, our caring, our cultivation of society. It's just, that is why we are here. But we don't need to do that at the detriment of our own health.
With that being the case, and you were talking about how women are taught this and kind of come into the world this way, there's also this accompanying sense, though, of guilt when they do take the time to care for themselves, you know, because, you know, I shouldn't be doing this for me. If I've heard it once, I've heard it a million times. Well, you know, I'm all right. You know, I don't need much, right?
Right.
You go on, baby. It's okay. It's no problem. And I have an issue with that personally, because I think that that's part of it too. All of those things you listed in terms of those levels of intensive self-care are so essential. But I think it also is necessary for us to empower women to say, it's okay to take care of myself. In fact, I deserve it. And not wait for anyone else to co-sign that, but just run with it. Do you agree or have some distinctions?
I totally agree. I totally agree that, yes, there is this notion of women feeling guilty. I mean, we're always in this, I'm sorry sentence, you know, or this notion of feeling guilty and or shame. And that's a societal thing, right? I mean, society says that women are designed to, you know, get pregnant, take care of the babies, take care of the parents, both parents, right? Take care of anything else that I might need you to take care of.
The house plants.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what we That's how we're supposed to be designed. And oh yeah, I want you to go work too, because I need you to bring some money into the house. So we have all this on us, right? And it does make you feel guilty. And you're like, why do I feel guilty? And I'm doing all of this, right? I'm doing all of this. So I just think it's just how we have been mentally conditioned. And, you know, that's still going to take a long time, because we're still, you know, young girls are still being raised this way, right? So that's, that part is really not going to change. I just think women have to stop and pause. And, you know, maybe you have to, we need to put a list of every week, like, here's what I did this week, right? So that you say, hey, I did a lot. I'm not feeling guilty now that I'm going to go take some time for myself. You know, maybe if we started to document our successes each day and each week, maybe then we will start to not look at being guilty when we decide to take a moment, you know, for ourselves, however that moment may look, shape itself.
I want to raise a question about something that I think is really helpful. You know, I keep hearing this resonant, you know, use of the term women supporting women, right? And it's a wonderful construct, a wonderful concept. But I want to talk a little bit about that being really important. Because we can use terms like sisterhood and togetherness and women supporting women. But what does that really look like in terms of women being open to having deep relationships with friends and, you know, other women, mothers, aunts, whatever the roles are, to help them realize where they can go together versus every woman necessarily being, and this is one thing that drives me crazy about reality TV, women being pitted against one another in the workplace, in social settings, in dating circles. How do they get there so that that women supporting women idea becomes more than cliche and instead becomes reality?
You know, I think in during this, definitely this COVID period and also the election, I think you saw women really coming together in ways that I really had not seen in that I can even remember in my life. And what I mean by that is in the political spaces, you know, lots of women got together to get women onto the ballots, right? And then once they got them on to support them, and there were, this was literally strategic thinking, and this was all across the entire US, of focusing on getting women to become elected, supporting them in their agendas, supporting them financially by giving money for their campaigns, and very orchestrated. I'm part of a group in California, a California Black Women's Coalition, where we are intent on getting Black women politicians elected. And so up and down the state. So we talk about who they are, what districts are coming up, how do we need to support them money-wise, their agenda. If somebody starts attacking them, how we go on social media and, you know, put out all this positive stuff. You know, very, very cohesive, very strategic, giving us tools and everything like that. And so I have actually seen women coming together. And I always say that when women get somewhere, they bring their issues with them, meaning they bring, you know, if I'm a politician, I'm going to bring the issue of, you know, maternal health, right? Because maternal health is a challenge in this country, just in its macro. And if you're African-American congressperson, in the micro of that Black woman, right? The disparity is even higher. And so when we get there, we bring in entrepreneurialism. I have seen like so many, you know, organizations formed and started just in like 2020 to help support women on their entrepreneurial journey, whether it's Black women, white women, Asian, Latino women. I mean, it's just been amazing of how in both this political stratosphere and this entrepreneurial stratosphere, how women now are coming together and coalescing and working with each other. So that I am seeing something change in that notion of how women weren't really working together, or, you know, there's only room for one of us, you know. Mm-hmm. So that mentality of like, I've got to fight you because they only have room for one of us. We no longer believing in that. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm seeing we're no longer believing in it. And the minute you take that away, you have them women working together.
Gotcha. In describing that, you are talking about this kind of form of collaboration. I was listening and thinking, you know, a lot of people who hear you will say, women, she said that they're advocating for Black women. But I'm impressed by the fact that the work that you're doing, you know, Femme Aging, you know, all of your projects, all of the work you're doing, it applies to every woman everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I always think about the whole double minority thing, woman and Black.
Uh-huh.
Talk to me about that distinction, because there are going to be people who are pissed off who are my gender, who are upset that you're even advocating for women to have power. Then there are going to be people who are going to be pissed off because you're advocating for Black women to be in positions of power. How do you address those types of trolls, that's what I'm going to call them, are somehow angry at the fact that this double minorityism, and that's what I'll call it, is not only equitable and necessary, but driven by the fact that, and let me digress for a moment, as a guy who was raised predominantly by women since my pops passed away very early, mm-hmm. I learned a lot. So I don't mm-hmm. label myself one way or the other. I just tell people I get it. And when I say that, Denise, what I'm saying is that guys, my gender, have had a long time to get things figured out. And look what we have made the world into. So mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent of bring as many as women as possible to run things right away. So I just don't make those distinctions, but I do find the necessity, I should say, of focusing on women, but also in you know the circumstances where it's clearly warranted to say that there are distinctions between the overall class of women and then Black women, or if you're a Latina, or whatever the distinction may be. If you are, you know, the L and LGBTQ+, whatever the case may be, there are always distinctions. So tell me about that in terms of the work that you're doing and how you feel comfortable and confident in the fact that it's important to make that distinction because we are where we find ourselves.
Yeah, that's, you know, you ask a really good question about stratifying that, you know, Black to, you know, the sort of general broad. And even my friends, you know, when I first started doing Wise Pause, were a little upset that I wasn't making it just for Black women. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, you know, I am biracial. Mm-hmm. I come out looking Black. That's how I, you know, pretty much the world orbits around me. But it's not necessarily how I orbit,
right?
And what I mean by that is half my family is white and I love them. And I also have really diverse friends. I have, you know, best friends that are white girlfriends, best friends that are Asian girlfriends. And so for me to create something that's one construct would really go against like who I am, meaning that I would not want one of my friends to say, oh, Denise, you know, I saw that's all Black. How can I come? Right. Mm-hmm. I want something where everybody could come. That's our problem. I mean, we have to carve stuff out for Black people because we haven't had anything.
Right.
You know, the general world doesn't bring us in. And even when we're invited, you don't have anything that's speaking to us. And so when I do my events, I recognize that I have all women coming to me. So I make sure that I have all kinds of health practitioners that look like the mix of all the people that are coming. Right? That I have content that is relatable to a Latin woman if she's going to read us talk about lifestyle. Are you talking about, how are you going to help with the food that I eat? You recognize that to help me to change, you know, the course of that type of food? Do you understand that food? Do you even know some alternatives for the kind of food I could have in my meal? So when I do events, I take all of the nuances of culture into it, which is not what is done. And is it hard work? It absolutely is. I mean, it's extra.
Right.
It's extra work
absolutely.
That you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, and then there are times where I'm really clear. I mean, you know, my last documentary was called Push Out, the Criminalization of Black Girls in School. very specific. I'm talking about Black girls. I want to talk about Latina girls. I want to talk about Asian girls. I wasn't talking about Asian Pacific Islander girls. I was talking about specifically what happens to Black girls because their numbers are too skewed for someone not to be talking about that. I'm shooting a film that starts in July and it's about Black maternal health. I'm very clear. That is what we are talking about. So there are moments of work that I do where it is very specific on race. And then there's other things that I'm working on, Femme Aging, Wise Paws, Tea Botanics, you know, our tea line, where that is just general, but it's, but I have consciousness to that there are other, all the people that are coming to that table. And that's where we fall as corporations, not bringing consciousness to all the people that participate either as employees or as consumers. And when they recognize this, everybody will find that one, you're gonna make more money. That's what corporations like to do. You're gonna make more money when you actually let the diverse talent inside of your company rise up and they bring their nuances to the understanding of how your company is working. And then when you recognize that there are all kinds of different consumers that would be interested in your product, if sometimes you altered it just a little bit to make it, you know, more relevant for them.
So if we're talking about the conversation around women and the world in which women survive, I want to ask you, what is the conversation that women are in about themselves in this 2021, you know, year that is most relevant from your perspective? And then in terms of the world we look at large, because obviously we are in America and we always think in terms of our own issues and problems, but around the world, what we're seeing shift is so dramatic and women are at the core of that as well. So from a nationalistic point of view for women and a global point of view for women, what is the conversation that needs to be addressed and why?
I think the conversation in the U.S. right now is probably more around mental health, right? I mean, evidence suggests that women are more prone than men to experiencing anxiety, depression, you know, somatic kind of complaints, physical symptoms that cannot be explained medically. I mean, so many women experience these symptoms where they go to the doctor and the doctor's like, I don't know, you know, and they walk out of there. What am I going to do? And they continue to suffer. And so that leads into depression, which is the most common mental health problem that women face. And the worst aspect of what could happen is that would lead to suicide. And we're definitely seeing more suicide among women 60 and under, right? So on a global perspective, I think, you know, a lot of things are, there's a lot of things that are changing for women globally. There's more health, you know, access to certain kinds of healthcare that wasn't there before, you know, helping women to get through their pregnancy. You know, that's a luxury here. We just see that as a given, right? I get pregnant. I got this health facility, whether it's a clinic, whether it's a hospital, whether I have private healthcare, that's going to help me during my whole journey to delivering that baby. We actually have that. In a lot of other countries, most of the world does not have that. You know, they're left to their own devices to, you know, get through that pregnancy and get and have that baby delivered. So we're starting to see more health access globally. You know, come to people, we are starting to see women actually become breadwinners globally. So we're starting to see women participate in the economics of the household. We are seeing in some countries, women starting to have laws that free them to be able to go and get educated. So something simple as education, again, that we take for granted, they can't even get educated, right? We are seeing where when they hit puberty and they have periods and now they don't have any tampons or pads or anything, now that young woman can't continue her education, right? And so she falls out of the societal ability to build a long life for herself, because now she can't finish up and get the education she needs. So we're starting to see things in education change and health outcomes change on a global level for women, that I think is really, really exciting. And in 20 years, I think will be, you know, that margin of women who are really suppressed is going to be smaller.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. My final question is one that may make you chuckle, but I'm going to ask it and risk it anyway. And I'm going to begin by saying this is not everyone, because I do not believe in generalization about anyone or anything. So I'll simply say, for the guys who don't get it, who don't understand how they can be better in terms of supporting women, whatever roles those women have in their lives, what advice would you give them? And that does exclude the people who do, because they do exist. God knows they do. So let's give them credit. But there are a lot who are just, how shall I say, interesting beings. So taking this platform and this opportunity, what would you tell a guy, you know, if you think that you understand women, but it's clear that you don't, and you want to be supportive of helping them be the best that they can be in the ways that matter to them, what would you say to that?
Listen.
All right.
I would really say to listen, yeah. Right? Men don't listen to women. You know, doctors don't listen to women. But men, you know, they think they already know what you're going to say. And so they've already played that out. And whatever it is you're saying, they're not even hearing that. So I would just think if men could, you know, maybe occasionally actually look the woman who you're dealing with right in her eyes. Because when you connect with somebody straight to their eyes, you actually have zoned into their spirit. And that just connection actually reorbits you into an experience with them, right? So somebody you see every single day, but if you look them straight in their eye in a sort of close-up position, you know, it reconnects you to that person. So I would just say definitely men, you know, to really listen. And then, you know, what you hear, don't provide advice and try to solve something. You know, a lot of times women aren't looking for you necessarily to solve it. We've figured out a whole lot of stuff that we know how to do. Sometimes we're just wanting to know that you support us, that you hear us, and that you understand that I'm having some challenges at the moment. You know, these are some things that you could do to help me out. You know, one could be not complaining about that I've got to open up the window all the time because I'm hot in here, right? or that, you know, I'm really having a hard time, you know, at work. And I know you're having a hard time at work, but I'm also having a hard time at work. And it just acknowledging that I'm having a hard time at work. It's not really a whole lot. You know, women aren't asking really for a lot from men. But the little they do ask, they don't get.
Right. That's powerful. Listen, it's so simple. It really
is. It's so simple.
Yeah, but so powerful at the same time. So Denise, we're going to close out now, but I had to ask you, you mentioned one of your other upcoming projects, but I understand you're working on another documentary about Dr. Fauci.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, so that's just, you know, the life and times of Dr. Fauci. A couple of weeks ago, we just recently shot him and his wife just at home, you know, what their life is like when he's not, you know, running around the country or on, you know, 1,000 news outlets. And he's just really this incredible human being that has just lived his life to help people.
Yeah.
Right. So we get to follow his early journey, his early career, how he got, you know, involved in health. How did that come about? How he got involved in infectious health, and where he's been on some of the really big issues. You know, obviously we know about his work during this COVID pandemic, but he's been there for the other pandemics that didn't happen to just hit our country, you know, like SARS and MERS.
Right.
But also his long work in the area of HIV.
Yeah. And I saw Push Out, by the way. It was fantastic. So
thank you.
I can't wait to see this one. And Denise, if people want to learn more about any of your many endeavors, Tea Botanics, Wise Paws, Hot Flash Tea, Femme Aging, where can they find a consolidated access point to all of that information?
I don't know if there's a consolidated access point, but I mean, you could probably go to Tea Botanics, T-E-A Botanics.com, and you can, in the event section, you know, you'll be able to link to Femme Aging, but it's just FemmeAging.com, WisePaws.com. You can link to both of those. I would probably say that would be the most central place to go to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you can just look up Denise Pines, Boss. That would work. Denise, as I expected and certainly have not been let down on in the least, this has been a fantastic conversation. I have enjoyed reconnecting with you. And now that we're in the same place, perhaps we can do that outside of this activity.
But yes,
thank you so much for your insights and for the work that you're doing. I got to tell you, I knew that you were engaged in making change, but I just think that there's so much more that you're going to do. And personally, I can't wait to see it. So thank you for sharing all of this with our audience.
Thank you.